Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Kaylin Kyle. Hello, welcome to the review show for Match Day 9.
Is it the review show?
You just renamed the show?
Yeah.
Isn't it called Extra Time?
Yeah, I got a little
Did
lost.
You just call us MLS Wrap-Up? Is that what you said?
No, I wasn't on Wrap-Up. It's like a weekend where I don't work and I walk in here. I'm just like, what happened? I feel so unprepared.
So it's a U.S. and Canadian-based professional soccer league.
Got it.
There are 29 clubs and they play 11 players each with a ball.
This is a podcast that's been running for more than a decade, right? Rotating cast.
It's actually an Apple TV show.
starring
Jason Segel and Harrison
season
Ford.
13 of Extra Time. Anders just said that's kind of incredible. By the way, we've lost poor Tom Bogert from MLSsoccer.com. He's not been lost from Extra Time. We will have him back the moment that Kaylin or Doyle or Dave or I or other Kaylin are not able to be here. We'll call him in. But Tom has broken deadline day. He broke his own news. He's joining The Athletic. Congratulations, Tom. We're so happy for you.
He cleared the medical?
Apparently.
It's been touch and go for a little bit.
Why did he leave? As Wilfred Nancy would say, Tom knows why. We will find out exactly why. But we're so happy for him to
make the move. His tracksuits, they were too noisy.
Well, we've established. See, I like that you came in leather today. There's no switch.
It's fake leather, so it doesn't give you that sound. So.
The other reason he had to leave is because as a diehard New York Knicks fan, like Matt Doyle, there wasn't enough room for both Matt and Tom, which is why I'm gifting Matt Doyle his own New York Knicks rally towel. All the last 2 hours
That's
in the pregame
amazing.
Show, you guys heard, but no one else knows. The whole time Doyle was doing this with me, I would go New York, go New York, go.
Anders, run the clip.
And then Doyle would do it again.
Wait, what was that?
What was the clip?
You didn't recognize the Luka clip from last year?
No.
Everybody's acting tough when they up. You haven't talked. That was right before he annihilated the Suns.
Is that future New York Knick and current out of playoff player Luka Doncic?
You have not said a single word about the Knicks all year long, and suddenly you guys go up 3-1 in a series. I still think you're going to lose. Because
actually, no, you already told us they're going to lose in six. This is the part where Doyle brings out the time machine and explains all. Rowan Alexander Barrett Jr., say his name.
RJ Barrett has been amazing.
Canadian
should
legend.
I just see myself upset? Because I have no idea what's going on
both
right
of
now.
Us. I'm it's because like Doyle hates Canada.
Kaylin, you're on my side. Because
we can talk Raptors, RJ's, and then I know what I'm on
but
about.
But RJ's Canadian, and Doyle hates him because he's Canadian.
Oh, boy.
Doyle, do you hate all Canadians?
Yeah,
I do not. Yeah. I'm fond of you. I'm not so fond of RJ Barrett,
son.
But he has not been...
I raised him as a child, and now to see him on the big stage.
So the context for anyone who's lost now...
Oh, no
the
one's
Knicks,
lost. Everyone knows.
The Knicks
just
the
had...
The NBA is back,
the Knicks just had their best weekend in maybe a quarter century.
Are
maybe
you good?
A quarter century.
The rally towels this, are out.
You're all Cleveland fans from here on out, or else this is just going to get so much worse. This is going to get
This is probably the peak, unless they won the championship.
I was going to say, because if they get on, then it's dread. It's like, oh my God, we're
here. Well, there's no expectations, but I think this is the peak because it's the like euphoria.
Guys, how long have you had that in your pocket? Because it looked very...
While.
Yeah.
I had to get it cleared by the production staff. It was a whole thing. Yeah.
Anyway, Tom is also probably in a similar state of mind.
Tom did a transfer update hit yesterday in a Knicks jersey.
That's true.
That is true. Yeah, that is true.
That's
I
the
saw
peak.
That.
That's a peak. Tom was also compared to a soggy 6-hour-old cheese sandwich in the YouTube comments.
Wow. So why did you just do that?
Yeah.
There's highs and lows. I'm just trying to keep them even keeled, right?
That's good.
Dave
it's like,
Clark,
it's like older brother type of
stuff.
Yeah, just
like, chill. Cool you uncle, haven't made like, it yet, right. Okay? You got a full deadline day to cover. By the way, we're monitoring Tom's live blog right now on The Athletic as we follow this deadline.
What Tom needed on his first day was to be taken down a notch.
Yeah. Right. Andrew just was always the one that was getting taken down a notch. So he's like, not today, baby. Tom, you're not here, baby.
Chop him down like a true older brother. By the way, Dave Clark asked us, which MLS personality will grow the best mustache to replace Tom? Sasha Kljestan probably already holds the title. He doesn't have to grow it.
Mm-hmm. Dax McCarty.
Dax has got a good one.
Yeah, I feel like we're talking people.
I mean, the question is,
he's not retired
MLSsoccer.com, or is it? No, MLS personality.
I'm working on a little.
Could be Dax.
After looking at two beards for years, I'm working on just a little something.
The way I would break it down,
a little. It's not that much.
I wouldn't shave a quality beard into a mustache. So I would take the lowest quality beard and I would go for it there.
Okay, fine. No, when November comes, I will make a promise right now. I will go full. That might be playoffs,
it's gonna be
too.
Gross.
I might go full playoff / Movember mustache.
I'm going to be sick that week.
Yeah.
I'll be sick the whole month.
So is Mindy. Yeah, that's fair. All right. Let's get into it. We apologize to all of you who are listening to a wonderful interview with Kevin Paredes last week and just heard Dave cackling about Domino's. Bill Carroll, Red Bull section.
Don't say Domino's. I don't want to be associated
with Domino.
Yeah. It's a word. Yeah. It's not a brand of food or whatever.
We were told technically Domino and Domino's both can be used as the plural, I was told in the mailbag.
Okay.
So I think we're good there. But Bill Carroll, who reemerged, it's been a while since we've heard from Bill. We used to always.
I think it's been
Bill.
Tough in section 130.
That's true. He says, that was your best interview. Sorry I didn't hear a word of it because I was listening to you talk in the background about Domino. Then he says so Domino, funny. Exclamation mark. So that's funny. Pretty good stuff. All right, let's jump into the soccer. We start with midweek. We will talk about CONCACAF Champions League. Of course, the Union hosting LAFC in an all MLS semifinal on Wednesday night. Jeff Tibbetts hit us up because there's other action midweek for MLS teams because they are into the U.S. Open Cup. We also had Canadian Championship start last week. So the domestic cup competitions are off in full force. Jeff says, put an MLS squad on cup set alert. And Dave, do the honors.
I'll start with Houston. Houston have to travel to Tampa. Tampa are one of the most well-run, budgeted organizations in USL. They've got a great home field atmosphere. They haven't really played MLS teams at home since they've sort of come back around. So I think it'll be a really good one. But Houston's one of those teams where they are probably going to ask themselves, like, the season's gone really well. How much are we going to stretch ourselves?
Yep.
Early on. And this is normally the types of teams where if they back out a win, now you start to get deeper in. Maybe you start to focus on this to say there's a shot at a trophy. But I would be surprised if from Pat Onstad down right now, you're saying, you know, the star players are sitting this one out. Maybe not even traveling because the focus for you should be on making the playoffs.
So here's the pushback on that. Star players who will be on the field. Sebastian Ferreira is going to be on the field for this game. And we know that this guy can put the ball in the back of the net. He doesn't do anything else. He has not been playing regularly in MLS games. But like, this is the type of venue, the type of game where he could use a performance that could get him back into the
I was going to say, if he scores, do you put him back into your starting 11?
No.
For Houston right now.
Yeah, because I would say the guys who I'm starting have to lose their... Like, him going and scoring against Tampa doesn't win him the spot over the guys that are playing right now that have been productive. That's in my opinion. But I also think that there's a disconnect right now.
We've done a lot of Houston talk this year.
I think from a straight culture standpoint, I think you don't put him back in. Like, Ben has clearly said, like, you are not matching the expectations. And the whole thing was to rebuild the culture. So it's not just about the goals. I think it's about everything else. By the way, he's going to be in Forrest Lasso's pocket anyway. So don't even worry about it.
Forrest Lasso.
A lot of pressure when your name is Forrest Lasso, when you have a child, to give your kid an awesome name. Congratulations to Forrest Lasso and Mrs. Lasso, who have had but Morgan Tenza dropped this somehow perfect timing into my timeline. He is a center back for Tampa Bay. Say hello to Milos Rain Lasso. Rain, like you're a king.
Not the
or queen.
Seattle Rain.
Yeah, like you're, you know, rain over something. You rule. So Forrest Lasso off of baby is going to just absolutely pocket.
Do you have a
Sebas Ferreira?
soccer North American fatherhood Discord, or does your bell just go?
That's a great idea.
Rain at your house.
Yeah, I was like, oh no, this happened to stumble onto my timeline. Yeah,
I was reading Tom's
Doppler radar
transfer thing. So what happened? Did Weeby just start talking about the child of fatherhood. A USL player?
Boris Lasso, former
USL. Should
I go
on to my team that I'm looking forward
to?
Please, because I'm again lost.
We're talking good.
It's Monday. I haven't had enough coffees for this. I'm going Minnesota, Detroit City. Because and I'm not going Minnesota for all the reasons. Yes, my father-in-law, but they're three losses back to back in league. They're going to Detroit straight from Seattle. Difficult loss in Seattle, 1-0. So they travel directly to Detroit. Detroit plays in a really cool stadium. It's, I think, believe it holds 5,000. It's sold out. It's incredible. And remember last year, I believe they knocked out Columbus.
Yep.
The fans were
wild.
The fans are insane there. So yeah. It's going to be really difficult for Adrian Heath, both mentally and physically, because they haven't been home. They didn't go back to Minnesota to then go to this place where Detroit, USL teams, they get up for these games because they're thinking these players are like, look, I have an opportunity to maybe be seen by an MLS team. Maybe I'm an unheard name, or I'm maybe on that border of, you know, early on in the season where there's injuries that are being picked up, or like Minnesota lacking number 9 goal scoring opportunities. So I think it's going to be really difficult for Minnesota to go there. I think it's going to be one of those ones where they know they need to win this, because once you go 4 losses, I mean, it's not as bad as Inter Miami yet. We're going to get to them in a hot minute, but it's still mentally, you're like, okay, we've lost 3 now in season and now to a USL team. And no disrespect to any USL teams, because I know that there's incredibly good players in there. But if you're a Major League Soccer team with the quality that Minnesota has, they should win it. But Detroit, they play man-to-man as well, so it's going to be difficult.
It is tough when you are now sort of the measuring stick for how bad it gets. Like, is it bad or is it Inter Miami bad?
No, it's not Inter Miami bad. No, get out of here.
I know, but that's tough for your Inter Miami on that spot. By the way, yeah. We are monitoring this Tom Bogert live blog, and here he is saying that the Galaxy have reached out to FC Dallas about Paul Areola.
That would be
my
a very...
Galaxy.
Yeah.
My one win on the year Galaxy. Exactly. Let me just turn around so you can see you can't see it, but you can cut the Ricky Pooge on the back here. We got a goal.
Anders, run the clip.
Is there a clip?
This is football heritage.
That's you are absolutely right, Jose.
Man, Doyle's just pulling strings back here.
Exactly. I'm like, wait a second.
What how early did you get into work to do this?
Doyle's got all the strings in the back.
Where's the background? I thought I'd be up on this. So we'll talk more at Galaxy. And
this is why Doyle showed up late. He's been collecting all these clips all morning.
It sounds like Dallas rejected it out of hand, but we shall see.
I don't think they rejected it out of hand.
You don't think so?
Yeah.
Think they're possibly open to it?
Didn't he not play this weekend? Or am I
he played.
He no, played. He played. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, we're gonna dive into the Galaxy, so we'll save that talk. We'll try to focus here on U.S. Open Cup.
Would you get a Paul Areola Galaxy jersey immediately?
He already has one. Yeah, he definitely. He's already got it made somewhere.
From 2012, when he played 3 academy games for the Galaxy and then went to Cholos.
All right, you guys take over the show. I'll do some work in the background here. And, you know, if we get FedEx like next hour air, perhaps I can get it in. Doyle, cup set.
Miami, obviously. Just they're playing terribly. They don't have a lot of depth, and depth is always the big test during these games. And it's a derby. It is a local derby. Miami FC. Or is it FC Miami?
Miami FC.
Miami FC.
And they're playing at Miami, not Inter Miami as well. So
yeah. So this is. I mean, this one.
So confused.
one of the best stadiums
Where's
in the
FC
USA.
Go? Where are they playing?
Or the AAC. I don't know.
So it just has all the stuff you would look for if you're looking to pick an upset.
Like it. I mean, these are what we love about the U.S. Open Cup in these early rounds.
Do you think they just play Mark Antony on loop for a Miami game? Like probably, they don't break it up. They just play it straight
like
through.
That,
yeah. I'm going to go with, Monterey Bay hosting San Jose. Monterey Bay and Frank Yallop hosting San Jose. By the way, Simon Dawkins is in the squad, the USL Championship squad. He has not played a single minute so far in the USL Championship.
That's very Simon Dawkins.
But he and Frank clearly just still.
Is Marvin Chavez?
Do not see Marvin Chavez in the team.
Upsetting.
But Alex Dixon, former Houston Dynamo homegrown, I believe,
is
playing very well. And then Christian Valeski is just absolutely killing it. I think it's 3 goals in the Champo so
far. The original Cal Jennings.
Yeah. If you're lost now, just soccer way.
Shout out JJ Williams,
your friend, or you've been listening to us for 13 years. Yeah. That's the alternative there. So U.S. Open Cup.
I'm still trying to catch up with a lot
as well. It's an ongoing process.
Are the Northern Colorado Hailstorm in? By the way,
I considered that, but they're playing at the Rapids.
Oh, they're playing Colorado? Well, that's a win for the Hailstorm, too. That's an easy
It's a win for Colorado as a state.
Yeah, for sure. All hail the Hailstorm.
Oh, boy. Okay.
What is happening?
I hate us today.
All right, everybody, deep breath.
I got you.
Deep breath. Goodness. We're going on 15 minutes into this show after
people...
Do you
think at the end of this, your husband's going to go... This is work?
Yeah.
He's going to...
After Saturdays, I'm like, I'm exhausted. Sundays are a write-off because I'm with the kids. And then Monday, I come in with you guys. And he's probably thinking, you live the life of Riley here. Yeah. Like, literally, you're in New York City. It's sunny. We're going to go for some margaritas later. So, I mean, am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
Bleep that out. Bleep that out. I don't drink.
This is a brown liquor special podcast.
Yeah.
Believe me, we don't have...
Are your margaritas brown?
No, but that's our brand.
He goes tamarind.
Oh, that's very classy.
Yeah, it is.
It's like drinking straight vermouth.
Or it's trashy. We don't know. It's somewhere in between.
Okay. All right. Match day 9. Best thing you saw. Let's talk Major League Soccer. Dave, get us started.
Philly, baby. Doop, 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 doop. They're back. Mikel with a hat trick. So I believe it was now in the last 25 games. Philly Union as a club have had an equal amount of hat tricks for players than they did the 400 games before.
Oh, my gosh.
And so this was Union last year. They got up on you at home and they trounced you. They made you feel like you had no opportunity. We hadn't seen that team really this year outside of the first game against Columbus because of CCL, I think, for a large part. They come out of a weather delay, and I don't believe Toronto knew what time the new kickoff was because
I don't think Toronto, never mind.
35 minutes into this game, Toronto had not been in the attacking half. They had not really touched the ball. Philadelphia, a couple fortunate bounces, but that's Philly, right? They live in your final third. Every mistake you make leads to a chance for them. The front three or five, whatever is going on, are lethal. McGlynn was really good in this game as well. So it was Philly being Philly, which I think is good for all of us because they're fun to watch and that's what they should be in this league. But it was doing so before the biggest game maybe of the year. Rematch of MLS Cup. They host LAFC leg one. There is rare opportunities to get revenge. And this is like an absurd one.
Are you nervous though? Because LAFC didn't, or they rested a lot of their players and then Philly. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they got to travel.
Yeah,
I believe,
but they have that weekend as well. They have the bye weekend, don't
yeah.
they?
Yeah, but that's still, I think I'd still rather score four goals, yeah. right? No. At home, hang out, enjoy it. And I would say if Philly wins at CCL this year and beats LAFC in the semis, I think it wipes away last year, right?
Mm. I don't know if it wipes it away, but like it's
second team in MLS history to win CCL and to beat LAFC.
I think I would rather win CCL than do the double last year, but it's a coin flip. It doesn't wipe it away. No. It just like keeps heating this like sort of cross country potential rivalry.
Let me say it this way though. If Philly wins MLS Cup this year, but doesn't win CCL, that doesn't change what happened. Like I think for a legacy point of view, this changes things in a way that nothing else could, that Philly could accomplish this year.
I mean, I don't know. What I will say is that after this weekend's games, this was the first time maybe since February where it felt like Philly were ready, where it felt like Philly could produce a type of performance mm-hmm. that we saw in last year's MLS Cup when it was, you know, the game could go either direction. And like LAFC have kind of felt like they've been on the front foot all year long and past couple of weeks less so. So it does. Yeah, it's gotten me amped for CCL.
It would just heal the wound, but it would still be a wound. You would still look down there if you're the Union and think, my God, how close were we? You know what I mean?
But I think this is the trophy you want at this point. And I think Jim Curtin knows the history around it and the culture around like MLS teams have no experience winning this, what it would mean, the way it affects LAFC's legacy. I think the way it would affect Philly's legacy. Obviously, his experience in cup finals, which we're not there yet. We're only at the semi.
That would be what I would say, is that he has that institutional knowledge of the regional side, but also the institutional knowledge of his own club and their failure in championship matches. So that's why I don't think you heal last year. Last year would just be like, hey, the lessons we learned last year got us here. But how could you ever get over being like, smidgens away from a double when you've never won anything
LAFC
before.
Smashing LAFC at home in front of your
fans. But that's not even the final. Semis,
and then going and beat Gignac and Tigres at altitude to win CCL. That's what I'm saying. That like this is, but I'm just trying to point out how rare an opportunity this is.
So you know, Monterey is less than 2,000 feet. It's not a ton of altitude.
I want to let's.
I wanna what think, about?
I want to. I want to thank Nick Rosano for that one.
Let's get you out there. I will say, you on a run. Let's see how that altitude.
It's a horrible, horrible place to go play with altitude. It's honestly terrible, and you feel sick instantly. I don't know why
No, Doyle thinks it's okay. Doyle's experience is that it's actually not that bad.
Guess what? Surprise! We're going to the final, guys, and we're gonna do it.
What is
we're taking
going,
extra time on the road, baby. Like,
and we're going Galazzo for a right run now to start it out.
We're running doing our extra time podcast.
Actually, that's a good content idea.
It's not.
Yes,
I think it's great.
It would be a Kalen talking the whole time and silence from us three.
We're having a tamarind margarita drinking competition. Oh, tamarindo. And then we're running a half.
Oh, boy.
We could totally. Okay, anyways, let's move on.
All right, Kalen, what's the best thing you saw on Match Day 9?
I'm going Dax McCarty with Nashville, his 400th career start. Not 400th game, 400 career start. I mean, that stat's insane. I feel like he's aging backwards. He's like Benjamin Button. He gets better with his age. And then we had him on MLS 360 and just how he speaks. He's so knowledgeable about the game. He's so passionate about the game. I know he's starting a podcast soon. He knows football. It's enjoyable to speak to him. And then he just wants to win. He wants to see people do well. And I had asked him, you know, what's it like? Winning, losing. He's like, I just want people around me to get better. I'm here to lead this team. I'm here to be a leader and, you know, get the younger guys when I'm ready to retire to be able to step in flawlessly. I kind of know my role, whether I start, whether I come off the bench. And, you know, I love playing in Major League Soccer. He's just such a down to earth guy. So to see that stat, I think there's only two other people that have ever done that. So I think
Marshall
there's
three. And Becker, yeah.
I mean, that stat alone is unbelievable. I don't even think I played 400 career games.
By the way, Dax will be a pundit somewhere. Please don't take our jobs. Does anyone remember when he dressed up like Chucky on the...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, for a Halloween playoff
2018.
I had nightmares of that movie as a kid, so I'm glad I didn't see that.
Also,
anyways, that's mine.
In more dad news, I'm sorry, I just have to break you off. God. Yeah. Happy birthday to Dax's oldest son. He started his 400th game, and then he blew up a bouncy castle and had a birthday party this weekend. So if you were looking for any dad
related... We salute you, yes. Dax. From the fathers.
I was going to talk about the soccer aspect, but go ahead. Anything else? Does he have any like nephews or nieces or anything like that?
I don't think so.
Uncle
but,
Dax?
My Instagram reporting is a little bit behind.
Is this what you do when you get the weekend off from coming into studio?
No, this is soccer heritage. This is football heritage.
This is him all the time. This is him actually getting back into form.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just going to say, what we saw this weekend was the difference in Nashville when Dax
is so true.
And like Sean Davis is a good player. He does a lot of good stuff. Mm-hmm. He does not have the tactical new in terms of passing and getting the ball on the foot of the playmakers in the half spaces in rhythm. And Nashville are so much better and so much more dynamic when they're able to play like that. And what we saw was Muil come in on one side and who was coming in on the left side. It wasn't Picot. He was up top. I'm blanking on... Oh, it was Godoy who was playing as kind of a left shuttler. And those guys were getting on the ball in better spots, in better rhythm. And obviously Hani as well, because Dax was able to get on the ball himself and then dictate where the game was played. He's always been so good at hitting those passes and putting... like it's like he was saying, like... his overall thing is he wants the players to get better. The way he plays the game allows players to play better.
And I love that he dictates the tempo.
Yeah.
Like 100%. He's one of those players where he knows the exact moment of when to speed the play up with a quick pass, or he knows exactly when to put his foot on the ball and take that sting out of the game to be like, okay, guys, breathe. Like it's going all wrong for us. Anyways.
Really fun player to watch for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, like you knew based on sort of the early days into the mid career that he was going to be a great dad. These are all.
Oh, Jesus.
Sorry. I just had to make eye contact with you in particular, Doyle, and just lead you right into that one.
Goss isn't even listening to you anymore.
Match day 90. That's most of the time. He doesn't even respond to my text messages.
Tom, I don't respond to anyone's text messages. That's just an issue. Tom tweeted thanking you two for helping his career, but didn't mention me.
Did he not mention me?
No.
And my MLS 360 debut with you, Tom?
Neither
wow.
Wow.
All right, Tom. Noted.
360. Noted. I brought him to Generation Adidas Cup. That is the most sacred place on the planet.
Welcome to church. Doyle, best thing you saw match day 9.
Christian Benteke, his goal was dope and helped my golden boot draft team, which I needed. The celebration was cool.
What do you think Dylan Brooks thought about that celebration?
Nice. Good rapper.
I know. Yeah.
You got well, that.
Was, you know, I thought he's a couple NBA guys. Oh, look at us.
I just want to say, like, overall, Benteke has been huge for that team because he gives them a focus in how they play. His ability to hold the ball, which we saw in the first goal. Obviously, he's a huge target in the box. He's leaving it all out there. And you don't always get that from your high-priced DP. We'll talk about a guy like that in Chicago later. But like his will to go out there and perform every single game, even when the ball's not going in the back of the net, has been really, really impressive. DC with this formation shift, and we'll talk about another team making a formation shift in a second here. DC with the formation shift looking better as well. I'm just like weirdly happy for Christian Benteke because it felt for a while like, oh man, this is going to be very forgettable thing. I don't think so. I think there's a little bit of reason for optimism now in DC, and I think he is the biggest part of it. So I was happy to see him score that goal.
It gives them the first page of the game plan, which is like get with and get him the ball. And that's for DC something
you
that
build
hasn't
backwards from there. Yeah.
And they haven't had that in forever. And also, as you say, for him, just being healthy and like playing. And that's, I think, kind of why he came. Yeah. Was like, find the right place.
And he's into it
himself. Yeah. We talked to him at Media Marketing and he was like stoked about DC as a city. And I think this is the experience he was looking for.
Yeah.
Put him in the All-Star game.
I mean, he keeps scoring like this.
100%.
I know. It seems like, to me, it's like a slam dunk that he will be in that game.
Also, I've always been a stand for like big target strikers. And he is like the just like the prototypical, you know, and he does all the basic stuff you want from a number 9. Love watching him play.
Would you say he's the best target number 9 in the league right now?
We did this conversation earlier in the year.
Why are you pointing at me?
Because you're the one who fought back and your guy.
I know.
Did you change your mind?
I don't know if I'm
asking.
No, I'm just asking if he still think. I'm slowly starting to creep over to it because I do think.
You know, Klaus's mom's going to be in the comments section.
I mean, Klaus got taken off.
I know.
With an injury.
I still think Klaus is a boss, but Benteke's really impressed me the last few games.
I think Benteke is more of the back to goal, like true target, whereas I'm not sure that's entirely Klaus's game.
No, because remember I was saying I think Klaus is like bigger, stronger, and now I'm like, I've eaten my words from week 3, I think.
Yeah, Benteke is a mountain.
Yeah.
I think
he might eat Klaus.
I think they're both really good players. Yeah. We'll see what the season has.
I don't know what that was.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Galaxy are back. That's my best thing from match day 9. Greg.
The Galaxy are
they're
back.
They're not
they
back.
They are so back. Jesus. They're 100% back. There was a flickering on Friday night. Just a little bit of almost like a spiritual moment at the shrine. And all of a sudden, all the candles were lit and there was sort of a hum. It was almost like, I don't know.
It was almost like this is football heritage.
And they played against Austin.
Yeah. But, you know, obviously a bonus game for the Galaxy, but still a great performance. You have Chicharito scoring, Ricky Pouge scoring. We went with, you know, I understand why they're trying to get Paul Areola to play that up high wingback role that Tyler Boyd is playing on the right side. Let's go. Let's go.
I didn't realize until just now that I proposed something as my best moment of the weekend. You took it and it wasn't this. So you took one of mine and you have two now.
Throw it in.
That's
true. Latif Blessing didn't play this weekend because his family's finally going to make it to the U.S. He's been without them for a while. He's been really sad. Latif is one of the best people in Major League Soccer and I'm very happy for him. You said that was yours.
It was, but as my secondary. as my secondary, obviously. Come on, we're talking about a pairing here. You know, look. Yeah, like, are the Knicks going to win without Jalen Brunson and RJ playing well? No, I need two. I always need two. Best things that I saw. Best thing that you saw. Things, plural, that I saw.
It's really selfish of you.
That's the way it works.
Really selfish of you.
I completely, obviously, echo that point. Latif has repeatedly had, you know, personal issues being away from his family. Has, you know, voiced those. And now he's getting... He's getting the squad together. His people are going to be with him and couldn't be more happy for
him.
And
it was very cool of the refs to be like, go take care of the family stuff.
Cool.
And they is like they've built enough depth where they can be without a couple of starters. It was, I'm happy for Latif. It's been a
really tough situation for him from everything I've heard. So it's
Did you choose Galaxy because Ricky Pouche personally sent you that jersey?
No, Ricky didn't personally, but I like to imagine that that he may have touched it and given it some good Galaxy. I
went over, he said, Vicky, can you send this to Weaver?
Well, it wasn't Vicky.
Oh, yeah, it was like K-Dog?
It was.
Nice. Shout out to Kevin.
Kevin,
any danger? Any danger?
The legend. All right, let's jump in.
What do you want? The Galaxy will get it done.
Chicharito.
Okay.
That's what I want.
You heard it there. Size, Vicky and Kevin.
Size medium women's, though, please.
Boom. There you
this
go.
This is probably my favorite kit from this year.
Well, you'll say that different for the next one.
You'll say it when you have the Red Bulls one on as well.
Give the people the clips.
Let's talk NYCFC. We got a lot of complaints that we don't talk about them enough. The Blue Side of New York, and I'm confused about that because we dug into James Sands last week, and we've talked about Richie Ledesma and the number nine situation, etc. Apparently, Tom Bogert had some harsh words for NYCFC early in the preseason because a bunch of fans were hitting us up, basically saying this just in different ways. Quote from Brian Pulley: "How all of you mistakenly dissed NYCFC, looking at you, Tom Bogert." I mean, look, they just weren't as good preseason because they didn't have the same players.
Tom's words were, this is an incomplete roster. They need to make a lot of...
still incomplete.
They need to make a lot of moves to...
But it is much closer now than it was.
Yeah, but the point was, it was not a diss. It was correct analysis of the roster situation for NYCFC. Since then, they have added two of their three starting central midfielders. They have brought back Santi Rodriguez, who now is playing as a false nine. I think they added the starting left back and starting right back since then. So we're talking about half the team was missing.
Yep.
So Tom's analysis was correct. NYCFC looked really, really good this weekend. That goal that Santi Rodriguez scored, where he drifts out of they showed it on a replay. It was just a perfect view of it. Ledesma gets the ball.
It's the view at Citi Field.
Yeah. You're a big Mets fan. Ledesma, who's been very good as a number 10, gets the ball and drives through central midfield and then sprays it out right to Gabby Pereira. As that's happening, Santi is dropping off the line and Talis Magno is making that run from the left wing to the center channel that just completely discombobulates, we'll say, the Dallas back line. Santi drifts out wide and comes and scores from like on the back post. It was like a left winger's goal. It was a really beautiful interchange. It's like how Nick Cushing, I'm sure, draws it up in training. There have been more moments like that time and again for NYCFC. And oh, by the way, they're also really good at pressing, especially when you get a gift like happened on the first one. Like this team, I still think they should go out and get a number nine. I still think they should use one of those U22 slots. I'm not sure it'll happen now this window. We're recording this before it closes on Monday night. But NYCFC is going to be really good again this year. Going to be like the eighth straight year. They're really, really good.
I just think the fluidity of those front three, you just touched on the goal and it's like the fluidity of knowing, okay, if I'm moving this defender here, I know exactly where I go. And that was the reason why I did love Santi Rodriguez playing as that false nine, because he's a very intelligent player, knows how to manipulate players. And I think that's one thing as well, is it wasn't that New York City FC weren't creating goal scoring opportunities. They weren't dangerous goal scoring opportunities because they were getting into good areas, but it was just that extra dribble or that bad pass or passing to the wrong foot. So yeah, I'm in agreement with everything you said with the front three.
And I would say in the danger of those moments, it was, I think, a lot of players, and Talis Magno was a big one, just not in a comfortable moment.
Yeah.
Right. You want to set them up with the chances they want. And that's where I think you saw this weekend a little bit different. And we've seen, I think, since Sands has come in, since Santi has come back, it just feels more comfortable in general for this team. And the fullbacks, both of them, have been impressive. And this is like a team, Anton Tinnerholm was the best fullback in MLS for like 5 years. And they go out and they do it again. I think that's been a little bit under the radar.
We talked about their scouting. Like Ilinich comes in and did I know anything about him? No.
Yeah. Kufre as well.
Yeah. I mean, like, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, these are some of the best in the conference, maybe in the league already, just on performance. What I like about the interchange is like they understand that Gabby Pereira 1v1 is just a monster, and he had a goal called off in the 15th minute where he like creates it himself. But
great,
it is that like,
great run from Ledesma on that, by the way. A really unselfish run out of midfield to create the shooting lane for Pereira. But anyway,
exactly. But that's the point. Pereira drifts wide. He understands, okay, I'm going to let you focus elsewhere. I'm going to stand on the touchline. He was just a tad offside. Okay, now when you have Santi drop in, that's really the space that he wants to be in. Okay, Talis Magno, you're not a nine, dude. You don't want to be against two center backs. He got beat up early on. Okay, so now make a run out of position where they can't track you. All right, now it's all working, and Richie Ledesma is the next piece. You wrote in your column, Doyle, that you think Richie Ledesma had outplayed Santi at the 10.
I do, yeah.
Walk us through that. Just explain.
I think he's been a little bit more comfortable getting on the ball in those orchestrator positions rather than like pure attacker positions. And that's what they were missing with Maxi Morales leaving. And Maxi Morales is one of the great 10s that we've ever had in this league. And he put up big numbers in terms of assists especially, but goals as well. And people always remember the goals and assists. But Maxi was so great at finding those pockets of space to keep the move going, to turn it in from a 3 or 4 pass movement to a 6 or 7 pass movement. And suddenly Pereira is isolated 1v1 in space running at a poor stranded fullback. Or suddenly Talis Magno is picking up the ball underneath in a pocket of space. And Ledesma has been a natural at that since he came in. And then the other thing is he still has that easy speed on the ball that he showed with the US U20s a million years ago now. But I'll never forget that game against France. And this is a French team. Like, we know France youth national teams stocked with multi-million dollar pros. He gets on the ball and he just so easily creates separation, pulls away from defenders. And we have seen that happen now repeatedly for NYCFC. Just super dynamic player. If he can stay healthy, this kid is going to be really, really good.
I was going to make fun of you because I was like, I'm deep cut. He's going back. And then I remembered I did like a post-game show for that game. I was super stoked about it. I was like, what France game is this guy talking about? Doyle's the one who's ridiculous.
It's crazy because
I'm like, oh yeah, that was an epic game.
A lot of things in my personal life that I like last week, what did I do? Dinner, this thing with my kids, whatever. What conversation did I have?
And
I
don't remember. Taken the ball in transition against the
France
team.
That's fair.
So what are we supposed to remember?
Ledesma's super dynamic. Like, he's going to end up being an incredible pickup to the extent where I don't know if NYCFC is going to be able to afford to. Well, I assume they probably already have a trigger number from PSV because he's on loan officially from PSV.
This is what they did with Keith
Parks. Part of the loan, though, was he had to extend his PSV contract for an extra year. We'll see if they can keep him. If he keeps playing like this, he might be right back over to Champions League.
Yeah, a little bit of a different path, but James Sands goes to Rangers, gets some time, comes back. The Pigeons hit us up and said, how good has James Sands been recently? Quietly one of the best central midfielders in the league, balled out for the USMNT, homegrown player termed captain. Just a great storyline narrative all over the place. What is there not to love right now? I did see him doing the pregame speech, which I thought was cool. And you have sort of this, you know, two sides of this. Like, can we hold on to Richie Ledesma? We don't know. They signed James Sands to a long-term extension. Now he's going to be sort of like a Dax McCarty-esque figure for the club.
Do you remember what James Sands said after the 2021 MLS Cup?
I do.
What did he say, David?
Bing bong.
I'd forgotten about that.
Thank you, Doyle.
Yeah. By the way,
that was nice of you.
7 games, I believe, at Citi Field.
Can I just...
I don't think NYCFC have lost any of them, and I don't think they have lost. In fact, I think they have actually torn teams apart that make the baseball joke on social media beforehand. So,
is that why MLB scheduled the Mets for the most away games to start the season, but we're still tied for first? So I would just say about Sands, I don't think anyone thinks that's the point, though. I think he'll still leave.
Yeah, there's no way. He's 22.
I think he'll play well.
Yeah.
And I think he will. I think the club, the point of the long-term deal, and I think
was value
was that they have a vision for him. Mm-hmm. He is the first guy through the academy.
With the Knicks running through the playoffs and the Mets in first place, why leave New York though, right?
Well, listen, greatest city in the world, you know? Get those bagels somewhere else. I dare you. Can't do it. He's a Rye New York guy. Great bagel.
Jersey bagel? Okay.
Jersey bagels are good.
Yeah. They're better than New York bagels, no?
Whoa.
I've never had a New York bagel. Okay. Have you? I've never had a New York bagel.
Caitlin sits in New York twice, three times a week and says, I've never been to New York.
I don't. I come into work
right,
and
so
I go
you
home.
So you owe Italian.
And I'll bring a bagel.
Will you actually? Wednesday, I like Wednesday everything breakfast. Bagels. Those
great.
Are my thing.
Cream cheese?
Love cream
cheese.
What
kind of cream cheese?
Just plain. Not a lot, though. I don't like it really thick where it's gushing out everywhere. And
we'll talk about that.
Okay.
We'll take that offline.
Toasted, no toast.
You got to get a schmear.
Toasted. Yeah, toasted. Yeah, toasted.
No, it's...
Stop.
I'm not even... We'll get to this.
Okay.
I think Sands, the intention there is to still leave. What's interesting about this team, goes back to the preseason, is it is a very young team again. So I think there's a lot of possibility and space for this team to win. But NYCFC is still, and I think they're one of the leaders in managing, like, how do you have young, successful teams churn and continue to compete at a high level?
Domino.
Well done.
Yeah.
Really well done.
End the show. Right? Really? Yeah. Let's end the episode.
Probably should add a longer pause.
I want, really, I just want a bagel. Time. I don't know what this domino thing is. I actually am like, I'm so out left field here.
You toast a fresh New York bagel. You toast it the next day. Or you toast it if it's from somewhere else. But a fresh New York bagel, you don't toast it.
But it's got the crisp, freshie, though.
You're going to get crunch on the outside, I promise.
All right, I'm in. Bagels. Bagel. I call it a bagel because I'm Canadian as well. Bagels.
Oh, that
bagels.
Really hit me.
Okay, Sporting Kansas City.
Anders hates us today,
are,
by the
are
way.
Now the only Anders team in Major League Soccer without a win. Of course, the Galaxy got their win, and we'll talk about the Galaxy in just a second. But we did a little segment at the end of last show, and it was maybe hurried and just a little depressing because it's just not that fun to talk about right now. But we'll probably have to dive back in. We have a bunch of mail on it. All of it comes down to how hot is PVC in Kansas City? Poutine 83, which
Canadian.
I'm assuming that's Canadian. Canadian. So I don't know why this person is like invested in Sporting Kansas City, but they want us to know to talk about that concept as head coach and GM, but also how antiquated it is in this era of MLS that one person has enough juice, enough time, enough knowledge, enough expertise, whatever, to do both jobs at a remotely quote adequate level.
This is coming the weekend after they lost to a New England Revolution that has
that's where I was like,
it's not about the person. That person is not supposed to be in the weeds doing both those jobs. And you could say for a lot of them in MLS, they don't do either, really. Like, they have assistant coaches who manage training sessions, who do a ton of the legwork.
They do most of the work,
side.
Yeah.
And then they have general managers or sporting
technical directors,
whatever title you want to use, that does the bulk of that work. And they are an overarching, you know, head person. And
they're an executive.
Yeah. It's all about management of, like, how do you manage people and resources and all of that stuff. And then you're the face. I think we've seen in history that Bruce Arena, when he walks into a room, has gravitas. He's able to get deals done when he needs to. Peter Vermees has done pretty well on his side in doing a lot of that. Obviously, Casey doesn't spend at the level of the Galaxy did, and the Revs have been more recently. But that they're never doing exactly both. Bob Bradley's not doing that either.
How many are there now? So it's Bruce, it's Bob, it's Peter.
Vanny.
Does Vanny have that complete?
It seems like he does.
I think he does. Yeah.
With Will Kuhn's coming, though, you know, that's going to be shifted a little bit. I think that might be it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I can't think of it. So it is just those three. I still love Peter Vermees' game model. I still love, you know, I think we've seen that.
How long's too long for a coach?
Oh, Adrian.
Though?
Adrian's a four. Yeah, Adrian has full control in Minnesota.
Feels
yeah.
like someone should have remembered that.
Not me. My lips are sealed.
So I don't know. You know, like we've seen coaches last for a long time and it keeps being good, but we've seen it.
I feel like it needs like a fresh take. Like, I love Peter Vermees. I really do. But when you're a coach, how long has he been there?
He's been there 14 years.
That's a long freaking time for a coach to play the same system, the same title. And you look
for the last four, same system.
But you look at the last 14 years of Major League Soccer. It's transitioned so much, so much. The playing style, the players that are coming in. Maybe, and I'm not saying that he's a bad coach, but I think maybe just a fresh coach, a fresh mindset, just a fresh voice to come in as well, just to maybe like change it up. Because I know as a player, if it's, I don't know, it just sometimes gets stale. It's like a stale bagel from New York.
Is there, yeah. You might want to toast it. In that case, you toast it.
They need it toasted there.
Yeah, you got to toast
it. And you can
bagel.
Toast it. Also, watch out.
can I
there's,
just,
there's crossing a line.
You don't offend me. And at the, you know, with the risk of maybe being called an SKC or Peter Homer. Of like, isn't
Charlie
there,
Davies comes bursting
like the Kool-Aid man, like, whoa, I told
you. The tattoo.
I told you. Is there, teams have down years, like, especially in this league, especially.
This will be 3-4.
And back to back.
Yeah. I think the real struggle has not been with Peter Vermees, the manager. It's been with Peter Vermees, the general manager. They haven't been able to sign a good center back in a decade. You know, like the last time they got Beisler in 2009, they got Aurelien Collin in 2011, they got Aiko Parra in 2013, and they were able to ride that until about 2019. And since then, it's been trying to patch those holes.
Yeah.
And they've never. And if your center backs are bad, Sporting Kansas City center backs are very bad.
you can't possess the ball as effectively because your midfield's not getting the ball in better spots. You can't press as effectively because your back line gets pulled apart. They don't rotate quick enough. You're not creating chances as consistently and that are as high value, and you're giving up chances, especially on the break, that are going to kill you. And so, like, if you start... Honestly, I think if he could get those spots correct, then everything else would be 25% better. But he hasn't been able to get those spots correct in a decade.
And D-man. Right? D-man, we saw what Noboto brought to FC Cincinnati last year. And they improved the personnel.
I mean, they went out and they signed a guy, but he's been hurt.
Well, they have not. That is another position where they have not.
Yeah.
Made the right sign.
I would say outside back is sort of similar. There's just been a lot of rotation in outside back.
Yeah.
No, it's like it's a real concern, and that's where it's
tough.
It's Peter Vermes, the GM, needs to do a better job or bring in someone who can do a better job of talent identification so that you can replace Graham Zusi, so that you can replace Seth Sinovic, so that you can replace Beisler, Ike Opara.
We're talking about a guy who hasn't played in, what, 7 years?
That's what I'm saying, man.
But you're not wrong. Yeah.
You know,
talking
about a guy that lived on my block in Kansas City.
The one thing I will say is, Peter Vermes. Okay, so whatever role, for me, there's a lack of discipline as well within this team. 3 red cards in 9 matches, like, that's not good enough. No wins on the season, that's not good enough. 3 goals on the season, like, I don't know. For me, there has to be some fresh energy. So you can talk about all these pieces. It's not just, you guys just alluded to 5 key pieces, and they had a lot of injuries, but it's discipline as well. And that's what I'm saying when it's like,
it feels maybe, like the whole thing is going to get like, cleared out at the end of the year.
Yeah, it just feels like that suffocating where you're like, you just need
the
fresh
air.
And
if that's the case, if it's going to be cleared at the end of the year, isn't that what a 5-year contract to Peter is saying? Is like, you're the guy that's going to do the
clearing. Absolutely.
The 5-year contract.
Like, but you have, you know this better than me, but like, in this conversation is also like, they rebranded this team and turned them into one of the guiding lights of this league.
100%.
A club that has helped the growth of this league.
100%.
Outsized what other clubs have done. And Peter Vermes has made it a soccer central, right? They built that training facility. I think most refereeing courses are there. A ton of coaching programs. Yeah. U.S. national team on the men's, women's, and youth sides are using it. So it's just... we keep getting this question, and I think part of the context we have to give in the answer is, it is not just, oh, Peter Vermes won a lot of games. Peter Vermes is larger than just a coach, and that's part of the relationship that you are managing here, and that's part of why he got a 5-year deal coming off a year in which they didn't make the playoffs. Because he is Peter Vermes in Kansas City, and it's not just he's a good coach.
And if you think they aren't having these exact conversations internally, like, you'd be crazy. Like, they're the ones signing the players. They're the ones looking at the future. I mean, I'm sure they're re-examining just about everything they're doing, whether it be from an injury perspective and a player health standpoint.
I wonder if they'll get Busio back on loan or something, because it's been a disaster for him in Italy.
You don't even see him playing. I mean, that's where I come back to it is like, not, and I think, again, I was going to come at some point and say, I think you undersold the success they've had as compared to the resources that Peter had to put into it. I mean, what they did in the first decade, at least, is just kind of crazy. But now we're sort of into a new era, as you said, Kaylin. And how do you survive? How do you thrive in that era? And they're right now not hitting the notes.
I mean, it's sad because it's such a cool place to go. Like, I've been there as a fan.
It's
literally amazing. The fans are crazy. And like you just said, like, when you think Major League Soccer, like, from back in the day, you think Galaxy. I think Sporting as well. Sporting Kansas City. Let's just get that clear. But like, I don't know. I love them. So it sucks to see them and a great coach not doing well for more than one season.
It's also interesting. They struggled on the attacking side with signings for a while, especially in those early days. And it was like draft picks and interleague guys.
Yeah, right. Like, you know, BLO,
the Binnies, Bounds, the Doms. Yeah. And they were like, oh, you know, Omar Bravo didn't really work out. But now it's flipped because they got Johnny Russell right. I think they got Pulido right. He's just been hurt. Now, could you have predicted that? Yes. Gotti Kindo was pretty good. They developed Daniel Shallowey.
Eric
guy
Tommy's
that,
been good.
Yeah. So like, you know, your guy, Willy Agata, I know it's stress fracture. We now have a reason. We have an excuse. Yeah. But like, so it's weird how it flipped. You know what I mean?
Doyle raises the banner. We have an excuse.
Well, I mean, the big thing is, if you look at that original Sporting team, Chance Myers came through the draft.
Yeah.
Matt Beisler came through the draft. Graham Zusi, Roger Espinosa, they came through the draft.
By the way, Roger, he's starting this week.
Yeah, it's like...
nobody loves Roger Espinosa more than I love him. Yeah. Like,
It's about the spine.
When you built that spine, Kansas City didn't have the resources every other team had, so they took risks in their signings. Like, they would sign an Eric Tommy, which wasn't a guarantee, because there's, if you're not paying the highest dollar, you're either going for something that's unknown for one of reasons. Injury, they haven't performed before, whatever it was. They could take those risks because the floor of the team and the spine was so strong.
Yeah.
When they miss now, it's missing on the spine. And there's no, it doesn't really matter how Daniel Shalvey
plays. It's missing on the
plays.
Spine, but it's also not developing guys who could be a replacement. When was the last time they hit on a draft pick? We're talking probably a decade.
Yeah.
You know, it might be Dom Dwyer. It might be the last really good
Which draft. They shouldn't. Right?
Hey, Dom Dwyer's not signed yet. Bring him back.
Yeah. I mean, he's in training.
Yeah, he's training right now.
But Cam Duke and Felipe Hernandez and Caden Pierre and Busio to an extent were supposed to, I think, be, it was draft pre-academy. Now we're going to build out a strong academy.
That's fine. And then you got to do that. Yeah. Then you got to have Philly-like success, or, you know, at least RSL-level success. Yeah, in terms
Red Bull.
Of, yeah, and they haven't.
Yeah, TBD. Here's a Jonathan Kaplan question. Happy Cappy, what's up? Love to hear from you. Would you trade your team going winless in league play if you knew they were going to win Open Cup and Leagues Cup, asking for a winless friend?
Well, we know we trade spin. That because... Leagues Cup.
Well, yeah. Well, you qualify for Champions League. Like, it's an easy trade.
I would do it for the memes, because it would be like the most memorable season of all time. Literally go winless in the league, but you get two trophies.
I would do it for sure.
I would. It would be
Seattle last year. They won CCL. They didn't make the playoffs.
It would be more DC when they won the Open Cup.
Yeah but that one. Well, that one.
Because they almost did go win. I think they had three wins.
Yeah. Yeah. 3 wins. Yeah. That team was terrible.
Horrible.
That, like, it was. I was at that game. I was covering it for the league website. Yeah, right?
Toil on the
I actually
road?
Traveled
at altitude,
and yes, right. I did not jog. It was like a funeral in that stadium at the final whistle.
Yeah, because it was just supposed to be a coronation.
It was. It was like RSL. Yeah. Were they going to win by three, or were they going to win by 4-1? Bill Hamid was huge.
Louis Neal.
Say his name. Yeah,
Louis Neal. Okay, we've given Kansas City enough time here. Hopefully,
just the last thing though, this is why there is still work to do. Mm-hmm. Like, they do still have the potential to win two trophies. They are in Open Cup, and everyone will be in Leagues Cup. That is where sort of things I think have shifted. Of like, you don't just give up on the season because you have a bunch potential for SKC still
hosting Tulsa, by the way, on Tuesday.
If they were traveling, that was the one I was going to pick as an upset special. Still might be.
And then on the weekend here, they're hosting Montreal. So that is a great opportunity for them to get their first win of the season. We'll see if they can get it done. Andy from Revs Nation. The Revs beat Sporting Kansas City in this game, by the way. Says with Vrioni, he scored 2. Gustavo Bow and Bobby Wood all scoring goals this season. What's the best Revs attacking formation? What do you think, Doyle?
That 4-4-2 tight diamond with Vrioni and Barrero up top. Vrioni because he's doing like true number 9 stuff, and Barrero because he functions as like a second striker, but also as a winger can drop back. So those two up top, and then you have with Blessing and Buck as shuttlers and Polster as a 6, you give Carlos Heel license to go wherever he wants and do whatever he wants. And you allow both fullbacks to get forward. So I think that's the one. But like, hats off to Bruce and that entire team for being able to try like basically 3 or 4 different formations this year and make them all work to one degree or another. Like, this team, these guys are contenders. Legit. Like,
yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. 100%.
Shield leaders, actually, right now on tiebreaker with FC Cincinnati.
Almost like a team you'd put at the top of your power rankings.
Could be.
But you'd be mocked in the green room if you did.
No, so. You put LA. The reason why we mocked you is because you put LAFC, I think, 6th in the power rankings. 5th? 4th. Oh,
maybe.
5th. It was 5th. It was definitely 5th.
Yeah, it's like, find the middle ground.
You could make the case for putting the Revs number 1.
I think
1.
I had Revs, Seattle, Cincinnati was my top 3.
Yeah, you can't make the case for LAFC not being in the top 2.
Didn't they beat Seattle? Didn't Seattle already beat LAFC?
No.
LAFC
is a draw.
LAFC is unbeaten.
Got it.
They've played the least amount of games.
If they had played that one extra game, then they wouldn't be. you know.
Yeah, but it was early season Galaxy. That would have been a whooping.
It's a take, David. It's a take.
How about this? Let's go to LA. Look, they got their win, obviously, and Greg went with the 3-5-2 until he didn't. But the 3-5-2 paid dividends. You get Jovalich and Chytrida together, and all of a sudden, you know, there's chemistry and they're scoring goals. And Ricky Pooj is finding opportunities to be in good finishing positions and doing it. The vibes were much better. But Kalen, we asked ourselves, are the Galaxy back? And yes, no. Maybe TBD. Or are Austin
are just that bad. Yeah. I'm sorry. I love Austin. Your supporters are amazing. But I've said this since, I think, match day 2. Me and Sasha had this discussion on set. And I think it ended in a verbal altercation on set. Because I just don't think they're that good. I don't think that they've got the right personnel out there. Obviously, they've had the center back. They've moved Ring back in. Because how many center backs? 3 key center backs that have gone out due to injury? Or two at least?
Two
at least. Then they've moved Ring back.
Debate the word key as well.
You're starting center backs. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. I don't know. I just think Austin have a lot of work to do. They look as a team that's just not like they're very disjointed on the pitch. I feel like, you know, maybe the personnel choices from the manager maybe haven't been right. I don't know if that's adding disruption into the locker room. But yeah, I think Galaxy played that team at the perfect time. I will say, Chicharito turns this LA Galaxy team around mentally, physically, emotionally, leadership, everything that this team lacks. You saw the shift when he was on the pitch. Like, it's not good enough. Yelling, screaming in the best possible way at his players, like having to go at Ricky Pooj, stop taking that extra touch, just send me, because he's got like, but that's what you want. That's what you want from a leader when your team has been struggling, no wins on the season. You need someone to basically tell you how to play football again. You know what I mean? Like, play it, get stuck into tackles, lead the line. And then what is he scores the first goal, and you could just see what that meant to Galaxy. He was like, I'm here, baby. Like, wheel me out onto the pitch if I'm ever injured again.
It was like a huge weight lifted off the entire team to go one up right there. And the fact that it came Jovalich to Chicharito in that 3-5-2, which everybody had been asking for so long, and they looked so good in it, as they had against the Sounders about a month back, and as they had over the final 15 minutes against LAFC. I agree with everything you said. It's hard to get, like, you know, Austin was the perfect team to play right now. Chicharito makes a huge, it's hard to set your expectations up too high, because it does not feel like, it feels like this coming weekend it'll be right back to the 4-3-3, which does not suit.
You think he does that?
Yeah.
Really?
I do.
Why? Who do they play? They play Orlando away. Orlando's been terrible at home. They have one win at home this season. Surely he doesn't go to 4-3-3.
You would think, get your two goal scorers on the field, get you, you know, and using the wingbacks the way that they did, I think it they didn't settle for as many useless crosses, right? Because of just the nature of where the wingbacks pick the ball up in a 3-5-2 versus where fullbacks pick the ball up in creating overloads in a 4-3-3.
It also felt like, I think, Jovalich read the space really well. He was super active. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, Chicharito was the point in the middle. Jovalich went from channel to channel, which, when you had the wingbacks get wide, allowed space for Delgado and Pooch to sort of come in. Felt like a lot of the play actually happened in Vanny's golden zones, which are the sides of the box, which is where he wants to get his wingers in a 4-3-3. It happened in this game, inside players getting in that channel. It led to the first goal. That was the most effective part of the Galaxy. But the part you walk away from this game, and it's really tough to tell because of Austin, is Greg Vanny kept saying, well, I don't like the way it sets us up defensively. I thought this was the most stable I've seen the Galaxy look by defensively. Far.
Yeah.
So, and I in don't transition know. As well, they seem more compact. Yeah. Like, it was like, okay, if Ricky Pooj gets caught up in the end, we have 3 under midfielders that are going to track back. We hadn't
which
seen
allowed
that
him to go on that and do second what he does goal best. And say, I can run. But I, halfway through this game, was like, is this Austin being really bad and not taking advantage of those spaces? Or is it the Galaxy being much more compact and much and in cleaner lines and feeling more comfortable in this setup?
Diego Fagundes is out a month plus with a groin issue. Sebastian Giroussi scores a goal. It's rightfully, in my opinion, taken off for offside. He interfered with the defender from an offside position, even though Gallagher wasn't off on the original run. How much, like, we joked about regression, you know, and all sort of the XG overperformance from last year. We joked about bonus goals, but it didn't feel like it was going to be this much of a drop off.
Correct.
Like, the vibes are off.
Yeah, it's like the play vibes, is off. The vibes are off.
The personnel is off. feels like everything is off. They're below the playoff line now, 1 point per game, negative six goal differential, not winning at home, one win in four matches at home. Driussi not scoring.
Mm-hmm. Well, they did, and they're not creating chances.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's the scary part. Yeah. If they were missing, right? If they were playing the way they played last year and wanted to play, and some chances weren't falling, Zardes doesn't hit, fine. But that's the part I think that's worrying for them. And that's the part where last year they were super healthy and everyone played at their highest level. They don't have a ton of other options. Fagundes goes out, so Rigoni has to play. Like, you don't have any other option. I mean,
Rigoni's playing regardless. Yeah. No goals or assists in 15 minutes.
Finley's
appearance.
Probably starting every game now. Like, you don't have, yeah. I don't think you have another option unless you want to try Zardes and Aruti together and throw Driussi on a wing just to give him.
Well, and the other issue here is that, like, last year when Driussi is just absolutely mauling people, it's because of his relationship with Fagundes. Like, he drifted into that part of the field all the time. That was the golden connection, was Fagundes and Driussi. It hasn't been there this year. It can't be there now for at least the next month plus. Troubling.
Yeah.
Troubling signs scary. For Austin. Okay, let's dive more into the CCL semifinal, and then we'll go some one-touch takes. I'll only say that one time, Dave. That's when each of us are going to have a take on a game. Andre says it's brilliant. So
just I'm sure he does.
Yes. Anders probably came up with it, and you're just taking it off.
No.
I'm just kidding.
9 p.m. Eastern, Subaru Park. The first leg of the CCL semifinals, all MLS. Union hosting LAFC. LAFC with a 1-1 draw. Buanga with a goal against Nashville. And, of course, the Union put that whooping on Toronto. Shane Bilbro is upset. He must be a Union fan. He says, MLS gives teams the ability to request when their bye week is during the season. Ernst Tanner for Philadelphia appears to have strategically placed his bye week for the week in between CCL semi games in case they got there. MLS has now rescheduled LAFC's game for that weekend, giving them a bye week as well, therefore erasing any forethought strategy and advantage for the Union. How can we not look at this as MLS once again making changes to favor and or aid large market and big name clubs? Philly's a large market. Just going to say. Perennial contender. I just think it's the right thing to do. Like, you want to have the highest quality CONCACAF Champions League semifinal between arguably two of the best clubs in the league.
I agree. I like it. This I is would the right agree thing to if do. They weren't playing another MLS team, and I would agree in the final. I don't know that I actually agree for this one. It's two MLS teams playing against each other in a semifinal.
We also don't know that this was some like strategic stroke of brilliance for Ernst Tanner where he was like, you know, like Charlie Day at the board, like, okay.
Good.
Philadelphia. How do they pick
reference.
It though? Yeah. I am interested in
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'm curious. We'll have to get some.
Well, normally on this show, we have a bunch of extra time at the end so we could talk.
Amazing. Can't wait.
We'll get to it after we build our expansion rosters and front offices.
I'm going for margaritas. I'm out of here.
Who's the favorite?
LAFC is
Yeah, I think LAFC.
Yeah. Even though Philly played great. This past weekend, they're not as defensively airtight as they were last year.
Oh my God, Kelly's gonna smoke LAFC. I'm stoked. You are correct.
Give me the case for Philly smoking LAFC.
I think all of the issues we've seen have just been pretty much CCL related. A little bit of Andre Blake injury. I think they are the same team. I think McGlynn's even better. I think they've added Torres. They've added Pereira. I think Carriol's been pretty good this year when he plays on the right. I think they're deeper. So now you get two legs too, which I actually think is to Philly's advantage.
Okay.
I think LAFC so far this season have been, for the most part, in neutral, and Buanga's been special.
So you don't think LAFC is as good as their record indicates right now?
And I think last year being home for one game in the final was a massive advantage that I don't think exists anymore. And I thought LAFC were deeper than Philly last year, which was clear. Right, with Bedoya out, Philly had no substitutes, no ability to change the game off the bench, couldn't last through extra time.
I mean, they had Paxton Aronson, who's now playing real minutes in the Bundesliga.
We stood next to each other and said he was the worst player on the field.
He was really bad.
And that was still, and they still played him.
Yeah.
So it's not even like they didn't even try that. I think the next sub up would have been Brandon Craig, right? And now you look at a team that
but
has
But isn't
options.
That now the next sub up top?
Who? No, Brent, you're talking about Chris Donovan.
Sorry, my bad.
Yeah, who's played well and has more experience as a pro, but they don't need to play him because they have Gazdag that they can move around, because they have Pereira that they can sign to midfield. They also have Bedoya.
Yeah, it's helpful.
They had Bedoya at MLS Cup. I don't know that LAFC wins MLS Cup. So I think for Philly, as long as they play close to their level, it's there. I don't think you guys are wrong. I think LAFC are favorites. They won last year. Huang is the best player in the league right now. They're still very good. But I think a two-leg setup with the way Philly's roster is now composed, I think they are better off than they were in MLS Cup.
I do like one thing about LAFC, though. I don't disagree with any of your points. I think it's going to be a massive matchup. But with LAFC, the one thing that I liked with Steve Cherundolo is sometimes you see them build up, and then I think it was a game, Galaxy. They sat in, which I love to see that because it shows that they can play different ways in order of going up against different opponents, even though their strengths are get at teams, ball winning midfielders, quickly catch you on that transition. We really didn't see them sit in early on in the season. So I feel like that's going to be a problem with Philadelphia is what LAFC, like what LAFC's game plan is going to be coming out with them. What is Steve Cherundolo going to do?
Also, no disrespect to John McCarthy. If it goes to penalties, like obviously a boss. But if you're talking about just 180 minutes, I'll take Andre Blake.
To
make the two or three plays that it takes in open play to, you know, erase a chance that should be a goal to change sort of a momentum moment, I'll take Andre.
I just flashed back to Jim Curtin running 45 yards onto the field to celebrate the third goal at MLS Cup. And I'm like, this is going to be awesome.
I just hope Jim Curtin brings back his Prada jacket. I haven't been digging his fits lately. Usually his fits are on point for me.
He knew the rain was coming. He's like, I don't want to waste the good.
I don't know, man. After all the Prada talk, remember leading up to the MLS Cup, he's like, God, can you guys ask me something not Prada related? I think
he needs a sponsorship with Prada. But his fits are usually on point. The last two matches, I haven't been a fan of his fits.
Oh, okay, we'll have to take a close
look. Bring back the Prada.
Go designer.
Wayne Rooney.
Wayne Rooney. Okay. 9 p.m. Eastern, Subaru Park.
Was this
Wednesday.
The one touch take?
No, we're there.
Oh, we haven't done that.
Okay, one touch. Kalen, what has DC shown?
Maybe needed six touches to set us up for the one touch take.
I'm wearing a Ricky Pooj jersey, all right?
That's fair. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, they're clean and precise touches.
Kevin Case, DC United, has Wayne Rooney's switch to the 3-5-2 turned them into a playoff contender? What do you think, Kalen?
Playoff contender, I think, yeah, I'm going to say yeah, because now 9 teams do make it. And you, sorry, I had to like...
No, I like it. Like, doing the math.
And it's no disrespect, because I actually like how DC has been playing, because usually with Wayne Rooney and his coaching philosophy, it's the build up, the play through. And now they're like, okay, we don't have the players to necessarily do that for a 90-minute match performance, but we do have the big man of Benteke in the box that is, like you said... And now I'm on your side. I've switched to your side now. I'm sorry, Klaus. One of the best target number nines in Major League Soccer. And he showed that last game, but also the fight within this team. Because we kind of really saw it disjointed the last three games. I think they've won. They
won two in a row. At Montreal, at Orlando. So this could be also like, I saw that face you just made.
It's Montreal, right?
I mean, so it's Orlando.
If you beat the bad teams,
You'll make the playoffs.
Playoff contender.
Yeah, and I think anything can happen in the playoffs. That's the beauty of Major League Soccer. You go on a good run, you get a hot streak with a good striker. Wayne Rooney shaved his beard, so took a few years off him. So he's loving life now back in D.C. I don't know. I really enjoyed watching D.C. against Orlando. They look like a playoff team in that particular match.
Also enjoyed Donovan Pines with the defensive end move, like bull rush header goal. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Cesar Araujo was like, I'm not really going to defend here. I'm just going to fall down if I get touched. And it didn't work out for him. All right, Doyle, here's a one touch take for you. What do the Sounders do without Rui Diaz? He's hurt for a while. We have people hitting us up saying, is this the end of his reign as a top MLS number nine? They're wondering whether the Sounders should move on from Raul Rui Diaz.
So I'll take one touch for each of the three questions you asked.
Perfect.
So what they'll do is they'll put Eber into the starting lineup. And if that doesn't work, then they'll go back to Jordan Morris up top and Leo Chu out wide. What was the second question you asked?
Should they just move on from him? Is that moment coming?
It's a moot point. He's under contract for another year. Seattle's not going to buy out Raul Rui Diaz. I suspect that they would view it as...
trade or sell him.
He's 32 and injured. Who's going to trade for him right now? I suspect the way that they would look at
it. A lot of teams would probably trade for him right now, whether he's injured. Yeah.
But regardless, I suspect that the way Seattle will look at it is kind of a load management thing where it's like, we're just going to get you healthy. You're going to play 15 minutes the first game back, 35 the second game back, a half your third game back, and we just want to have you ready for the playoffs also, because we have enough to get through the regular season.
And Ebert, I don't know, is also can play every game. So
and,
like, yeah,
they're
splitting it all.
And they have Jordan Morris. They have Jordan Morris. They have Freddie Montero as well. So they're fine. I mean, Freddie, he had the assist on the goal. You know, like this weekend, it was like a really lovely layoff. So they have,
you know, Freddie Montero could probably go to SKC. He could get minutes there.
they have plenty of solutions. They have Rallery Diaz, you know, under contract for another year. They're not the type of team to buy a guy out. They're fine.
Is this a Kawhi situation?
Yeah.
Great. Could you potentially see another MLS team come in for him?
I don't think so.
I wouldn't be shocked if a team.
There's not a lot of history of guys trading for DPs, especially DPs on like mega salaries.
Didn't Inter Miami just go get Joseph Martinez?
Yeah. I said there's not a lot of history.
Got it,
and DPs, by the way.
And he's not a DP.
And he was bought out too.
But they still gave stuff up for him, no?
No, though they were the top of the at the waiver order, weren't they?
Yeah. I just think. Well, I agree. This is not my touch. I'm taking.
What about Houston? What if we're just like dreaming? What about Houston Dynamo? If he was somewhat healthy.
I mean, Rolly Diaz healthy helps basically every team in the league.
Minnesota would love probably to have.
Yeah, it's a non-discussion. Seattle's not going to trade him.
Okay. How about this one, Dave? Shaqiri, Gutierrez, what should Ezra do? He's got, speaking of contracts, I think this is the last year of his contract, Ezra Hendrickson. What should he do? Because, it's not working with Shaqiri in the 11. It is working to a certain degree with Gutierrez in the 11. What should he do?
So Gutierrez locked in starter. That's pretty obvious. I actually was impressed with how he played deeper in this game, and that I thought they'd be really easy to play through. It was Fabian Herbers and Gutierrez behind Shaqiri, and that wasn't the case. Part of that, I think, was on Atlanta, but
Herbers has been really good as a destroying number eight. It's been weird to see.
And if that works, then you can try and play Shaqiri and see what you can get from him. But he is the one who has to fight his way into the lineup at this point. And you can't slide Gutierrez wide again. So you have to keep him central because you can play through him. The goal, it felt like an obvious moment. Pick up the ball and just hit it. Keeper's out. He slides that ball back across to Shabilko, who just missed a chance in between like five defenders. And it was the game.
And looks off the defenders and the goalkeeper.
It was
the
game being slower for him than it was for everyone else. And that's a teenager who came through your academy. So right now, for everything Chicago does, has to be built through him. And I actually thought they played pretty well. They deserved more than a point maybe in Atlanta. I thought Atlanta was bad. And so even with the result and the loss, and obviously the story of they've given up late goals, Brady makes a huge save this time. So you're thinking
off the dome piece,
maybe they get over it here. Like, yeah, it is a young keeper who looks 40, but is 18 or 19, whatever he is. And then they still they don't mark set pieces and they still lose. But there should still be some positivity, I think, coming out of this for Chicago.
Are the Fire an egg or a potato? You think they're going to get harder? Or are they going to get softer?
Did you read the quote yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay, because I don't want to comment until the people know the context.
Ezra Hendrickson, here's the quote. When you get in pressure situations like this, by the way, he's saying this because the Fire lost late on and they have continually given up goals late on. When you get in pressure situations like this, think of an egg and a potato. In the same boiling water, the egg becomes harder and the potato becomes softer. So what are you going to be?
Why did you change your voice?
Yeah, why did you change
an egg
voice?
Or a creepy potato?
I don't know. I like a hard-boiled egg.
Cool.
I'm a big potato guy. Love potatoes.
Awesome.
Okay, Doyle, Charlie gets Swiderski in the right spot, and that seems to be a good thing.
You know who loves potatoes? Carol Swiderski. I guarantee it.
It's a Polish thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a Polish thing.
The change that we had been kind of waiting for since literally week one, it was a reversion to the type of formation, more of a 4-2-3-1 or 4-4-1-1 that Charlotte used last year with Swiderski underneath a center forward. And lo and behold, Swiderski gets a goal from about 14 yards out in the soft spot, created in the defense by a good run from Capetti, the center forward. Just instant connection between these two guys. I still think Swiderski's Charlotte's best player. Now he's back in his best position. They got a nice 1-0 win over a good Columbus team. I think that if they just simplify and go back to what they were doing last year for the last 20 games under Christian Letanzia, I think this is a team that gets above the playoff line and probably stays there, 7th, 8th, 9th place in the Eastern Conference. And that's good progress year over year. I don't want to say I don't blame. I understand why Letanzia did what he did the first month of the season, trying to institute a new formation and sort of tactical blueprint. I've said it before, like, you only get so many chances at these jobs. We get one, you want to do it your way. But that way wasn't really working. I think this way stands a better chance of being successful for a long run.
Grant Peterson hit us up and said, is Doyle ready to admit he was very wrong about Kamille Ujwiak and put him atop Goss theorem rankings?
He's had 30 games in MLS. The first 25 were terrible. The last four have been pretty good. That's not good enough for a DP. So no, I am not, like, I'm not willing to admit I was wrong. It's going to take more than 3 good weeks.
No L's will be taken. Kalen, Miami have now lost 6 straight games. And Phil Neville is answering questions about his job security. They lose to the Dynamo. Daniel Starris with the goal, as everyone would have expected. John, a concerned Inter-Miami fan, asked us what the future looks like for Miami. What does the present look like, and how does that apply to the future? What do you make of this?
The present's grim. The future could be amazing if Lionel Messi does come. If you like statistics, I'm not a statistic person, but I'm looking at the table right now. They are on the same as Montreal. That is not good enough. Montreal literally shipped basically all of their team away in the offseason. And I know, like, I'm probably being a little bit harsh. I love Phil Neville. I love Inter Miami. I've worked with them for the last 3 years. The ownership's amazing. They treated me with nothing but respect there. But when you have 2 wins on the season, 6 straight losses, then you have the derby against Miami. You lose that game. Yeah, there is questions around, you know, Phil Neville and whether or not long-term, what is it going to look like at Inter Miami? You have a player like Joseph Martinez that has come over from Atlanta United. He hasn't stepped up, dropped last game, came off the bench because we saw when Phil Neville did it to Gonzalo Higuain. Gonzalo Higuain had a reaction to that, started playing some of his best soccer that he did in all of Major League Soccer out of his 3 years that he was there, or 2 years, excuse me. So three, yeah. Then you have someone like, I know everyone's like, oh, Gregory, the captain, the key component of this. That's one player. I mean, you look at this back line, you got Kamal Miller, that Canadian international, an unbelievable center back. You have Capanna that you've just signed as a DP, as a young DP, or an actual like full
young DP.
Young DP hasn't scored any goals. Yes, he had those injuries. You have Pizarro that first year with Inter Miami didn't show up, then went to Mexico thinking, okay, because everyone knows that the Gonzalo Higuain and him did not get on. They did not get on the pitch or off the pitch. Come back. There's no excuse anymore. It hasn't been good enough. You ship Pozuelo off, that really is your only goal scorer and contributor on the pitch. Bryce Duke, for me, was that intricate play that they're lacking, that creativity midfielder. You shipped him to Montreal. I understand, because you wanted to get a good center back to come in. So there's huge question marks around here. You've been given too much time now. You know what I mean? I think with Inter Miami to not get results. They're second from the bottom in the Eastern Conference with just 2 wins on the season.
I just want to respond here, because I agree with everything you said, is John email said disproportionately high coverage of the Galaxy's poor season, but not Miami. The difference there is Miami's leaving a lot open because the hope is that Messi is the season. And like, they're trying to ride one line where the Galaxy have committed every resource and cannot after this. So that's the difference in the situation, is like,
but Inter Miami is also, last year they were fourth in spending.
Yeah.
Highest in spending in all of Major League Soccer. Now, I know that there was other issues. They, you know, the TAM and GAM got taken away from them, so they couldn't make moves for 2 years. I understand everything that went beyond it. Phil Neville came in and basically got a team that was none of his players because he didn't sign any of them, couldn't move any of them. So I get there's a little bit of a grace period with that, but then how much is too much of a grace period? So it's a difficult situation because, you know, I personally love that organization, so I hate seeing them in this position. But if there's going to be, if they don't win this game at Miami FC on Wednesday, I believe they play, Wednesday at 7:30, then because it doesn't get any easier, then they go to Columbus after that, then they host Atlanta United, and then they host New England, and then they're away to Nashville. Like, those are 4 games. Like, it could potentially go ten games undefeated.
Yeah,
which I'd hate. I'm hoping I'm giving it the commentator's curse, but that's the reality. I mean, Columbus, Atlanta, New England, and Nashville.
Nashville, Inter, Miami. That's a nil-nil.
Oh, that's a classic. That's a what? That's a 2020 playoff game right there.
It's a playoff game.
Let's see. Andres Gomez, here's another one-touch take for you. He's looking like the real deal for RSL. Settling in, looking very dangerous. A big win for them against San Jose this weekend. Jefferson Savarino also gets a goal. But yeah, Gomez, maybe the first sort of tangible sign of this new ownership group outside of sort of the energy around the stadium, around the community, but on field, the first tangible sign for them. It's been a hit so far. So
you can go to Apple TV and watch the preview of this last weekend's game. And I said, Andres Gomez.
Well, just cutting edge analysis.
Boom.
Drop it in, Anders.
Rapids fan in Salt Lake City.
Drop it in.
Run the tape. Oh, is that how it works? Run the tape.
Come on, Anders. Rapids fan in Salt Lake City says, Rapids are unbeaten in their last five games, dominated and should have beat St. Louis. Don't let your colleagues keep you from mentioning what's going on in Colorado. I never would, Rapids fan in SLC. Rapids should have won this game 3-1.
Okay.
No problem. Maybe even 4-1. Roman Berkey was a freaking god, like, was ridiculous. And also there was some poor finishing, but that's what happens when you're the Rapids and like the guys on the end of these chances are, God love him, Kevin Cabral and Brian Acosta and, you know, fill in the blank. Like, they had six big chances, almost three expected goals. They just didn't finish. And that's sad. They had to, like, gut it out at the end from Michael Barrios with the late goal to even get a draw. So, yeah, tough.
I was going to ask you an open-ended question, and I saw Anders texted us that they were an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah. Montreal.
I was just going to ask an opening.
We dogged on Montreal a little bit, but they got a win against the Red Bulls. Oh my gosh, that's another like depressing conversation we'll save for another day. But Bryce Duke has ushered in an era of relative greatness over three games.
he looked very comfortable combining with Aaron Herrera, who was played as a right wing back.
It's a player that you can't build your team around, but they're going to have to build their team around someone like him because of they're missing so many players, even now due to injury. I think Mason Toy's out with knee.
Yeah.
It's grim, but at least they got the result against a grimmer Red Bulls team.
Yep.
That's all I have to say.
I think that was well said, honestly.
Well, that's tough. That covers it.
Tough for Red Bulls fans. Sorry.
We left
section 132.
We left the leading team in the Eastern Conference.
I know. Cincinnati down here at the bottom. They look better without Brenner.
Yeah, I think so. Sergio Santos is really dogged out there. He makes good hard runs into the channels, which Brenner was not doing. He has some chemistry, I think, with both Lucho Acosta and Braden Vasquez. What's up, Weeby?
No, Anders is threatening me in my ears.
Why, are we way over?
No, he's just, you know, he's a bully.
Since he looked pretty good. They didn't look great. They still have not put together a full 90 minutes on both sides of the ball. But after this game, especially coming off of what happened in St. Louis, after this game, I'm a little more confident that they're going to figure it out and they're going to start playing the type of ball that I think we all kind of feel, with or without Brenner, we feel they're capable of playing. And then obviously then having the open DP slot that they could.
Helpful.
Yeah. Super.
Domino.
One of the Barrial has been underwhelming. But he's been, Barrial, I thought he was very good.
And
Arias,
who's been hurting in and out, whatever. But Barrial, I think the expectation, and we've talked about a couple times, like if Acosta's out, if Brenner's out, like he's the guy and he hadn't played well. But I think Santos making the runs he makes opens up the space.
It's kind of the run makes the pass type of thing.
But Santos will miss chances.
He will. But I think you've got to be okay.
But sometimes
with
that works out, right? you whiff and it goes right to
But like you got to be okay with that if you're Cincinnati because you want to see the team start playing with that edge and that energy again. And they had it in this one. And I'm not sure they had for the past.
But it's almost like open DP spot. They go out maybe trade for a center forward in MLS. That's a DP.
Anyway, Anders is literally threatening me. He says, we cannot do the mailbag question we have from Fonder James. It's about a new expansion franchises. And who would you start with? Player, coach, or front office? We'll do that one midweek.
We're all taking the front office.
Yeah, we'll do that one midweek. We'll have a bunch of fun with that one as well. And by the way, Tom Bogert here on his live blog says that the Portland Timbers rejected a trade offer in excess of 2 million GAM for Santi Moreno.
Love Santi Moreno.
Last week. They're not entertaining any offers, but that's the kind of
That's the kind of breaking news you can get.
Kind of information we've come to expect from Tommy Scoops. All right, that's the end of the show.
Was that it? That's the worst out you've ever given, Andrew.
That's the most Canadian thing you've ever said. That's the worst. Oh,
we're out.
We're out.
Adios.
Ciao.